It is Saturday, March 16th, 2013. We're broadcasting live from Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is KUSP Public Radio 88.9 and KUSP.org. Game development is a big business, but can also be a small town business. Today on GeekSpeak, the founders of Gaijin Games, a Santa Cruz-based computer game development company, creating computer games today on GeekSpeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Trock, so please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the air room with me, I've got a full cohort of geeks. Bonnie, Jean, Primsh.
Look how you call me a geek every time.
I do, don't I? And you always apologize. And today, I can't hear you, Bonnie.
Well, I'm on mic 5. Is there a mic 5?
Mic 5 is up and lovely, but not working. So you and Ben are going to just...
We're
say
gonna doo-wop it.
Oh my gosh, you guys doo-wop. Look so friendly. I love it. Ben Jaffe is a web instructor and world traveler and a practicing monotasker. Hey, Ben.
Yes, indeed.
And I didn't say that Bonnie Jean Primsh is a broadcaster at large, mediator, and printmaker.
That is the case.
You know, yesterday I was up at UCSC at the close of every quarter. They do a lovely art show called Open Studios.
Jeanette.
And all the students show up. And in the print facility, we'll be with Richard Wolfganger.
Wolfader. I never know how to pronounce his last name.
I know. Richard's awesome, though.
Richard.
And his class was doing a whole bunch of print work, fine arts print work, if you will, computer print work, but through inkjet printers with a really wonderful lab that's up there. But in any case, we won't get into that.
He's been having fun experimenting with the combination of those two things.
You know, and actually he's doing a lot of laser cutting print work, so woodblock laser cuts in the laser cut that I helped run
with.
With
his own work or having the students?
His work and his students. Really some awesome stuff's been happening. So, you know, you basically... You know what? We'll do that a different day. But what I want to say is the art students that she was... Yeah, let's have them on.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. We're getting geeky here. So, see, you're geeky. So, Richard's class was taking computer artwork. There are a whole bunch of designers that are working on games in the games program, and they partner with artists in the art department. And these artists had a whole bunch of their work up. And so I was looking at all these... characters that, you know, some of them are highly pixelated and kind of in a retro kind of, I love
8-bit kind
of. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Some of them are just beautiful drawings and rendered, and we talked about how that was happening. And then Jim Whitehead, who's currently the I think he's the chair of the computer game department, was there, and we talked about the program. So I really got into games. Yeah. And then while I was chatting with Jim on my phone, bling, bling, a text message shows up or something from Alex Noisy. Alex Noisy's here. Imagine that. And now Alex is a co-founder at Gaijin Games along with Mike Roche.
Roush.
I'm going to just continue to make those mistakes. So we'll just say Alex and Mike. You guys are the founders of Gaijin Games, which you both live in Santa Cruz, have some of your business here in Santa Cruz at the Sentinel Building with the Cruz.io folks. By the way, Chris and Peggy were actually founders of the GeekSpeak program. So all friendly town.
Cool. That's amazing.
All
right. Yeah, that's great.
Any case, Mike, you're also a... soon-to-be action hero, right?
Very soon.
Yes.
Thanks to Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And you're, along with me, a native, Santa Cruz native, and a big part of your development group is actually up in San Francisco. And we're going to talk about Gaijin Games and about BitRunner 2, which has this awesome character. Now, that's not a toy. That's a...
No, pet. Yeah. We brought you something that's definitely not a toy.
It's a collector's maquette.
Yeah.
Yes.
So definitely don't play with it.
It's like an action figure.
Barely even
thing,
look
right?
at it.
And you know what? My kids are going to play with it, and they're going to stick it in their mouth, and they get all that poisonous lead.
It's we can't delicious. Advise that.
No. No, my kids will love it. We were playing your game last night, and it was fantastic. But we'll talk about the game a little bit first. Ben wants to tell us something sad that Google's doing to all of us.
Wow. What a segue into that. Poor Google. They decided, they actually recently announced, which exploded the internet, that they are shutting down Google Reader. Now, this makes me really sad because guess how I prepare for the show every week?
You prepare?
Okay,
Google
fine.
Google Reader?
I get here at 9:45 in the morning, and I spend 15 minutes finding news stories to pretend I'm an expert
Lyle's
on.
Lyle's making fun of how he doesn't prepare.
Ouch. No, so what's Google Reader?
Google Reader is an RSS feed aggregator. In English terms,
No, I totally understood that. We're moving on. No.
In English terms, like let's say you get your news from CNN, you get your tech news from Slashdot, you get your some other health news from healthnews.com or something. I don't know. all of those news sites have this thing called an RSS feed, and that's all of their news that they've put out organized in this nice machine-readable way. Google Reader takes all of the RSS feeds that you want to subscribe to and puts them all in one nice little list, and you can go through that list. You can group things together and whatnot. Like I have, for example, a category called GeekSpeak. And so whenever I want to find news for the show throughout the week or, you know, the day before or whatever, I look at that category and I see all of the news feeds that I look for aggregated.
Now, and RSS is actually the system behind podcasting as well. So when we talk about podcasts, we're actually talking about RSS feeds being taken on podcasts. The only thing different between a normal RSS feed and a podcast is that there's actually a file type handled inside there. And that'd be the audio file. So any case, RSS, really great thing because a lot of sites are using this real simple syndication, I think is what it stands for.
Yeah.
And that allows somebody to make an application like Google, that would be Google Reader, that would pull in all those things and kind of summarize your stories so that you can then read further along. And the thing that's nice about that, I guess, is that it's attached to your Google account. I know Google Reader and I know that Miles uses it and you use it, but I don't use it very often. And the thing to me was the whiplash, I guess, of people saying, oh, it's so sad. People are like making artistic images of people crying. And
are they?
It's like,
oh, I haven't seen that.
Mike or Alex, do you guys use Google Reader?
Yeah, I use it and I'm not really that sad that it's going away.
Okay.
It's not the end of the world for me.
I quit using it about a year ago.
Yeah. I seem to use it and then I get too much and I just feel like another stress level. I'm supposed to read all those things.
That's why I don't really care that it's going away.
It's like maintenance.
You guys are all haters. I love it.
So are you assuming then that Google is now evil because they're doing this?
No, absolutely not. I mean, so Bonnie and I were talking.
It beats me, but I love it.
God, oh man, that's just dark. Did we talk about that earlier?
Wow.
That's you know what I love is that we're now laughing about that. That's not funny.
You were saying like, is Google now the bad? How'd you phrase it? The bad boyfriend?
Yeah, is he the bad boyfriend because he's not taking care of his users? You know, he's like taking Google Reader away, which he's created a you have like a dependency on Google Reader now. And
I love that we've given Google a gender, right? And assumed as a male.
Oh, it's
as well.
A male.
There's what? A couple ladies work there, right?
But I mean, what do you think? Google, well, male also, or female?
You know, it's probably
D or DOS. DOS, I'd say gender neutral.
Okay.
In any case, it's a corporation, right?
Yeah,
it's a person with no gender.
Okay.
We're completely off
track.
Why
are they turning it off?
They're turning it off because they want to, the reasons that they provided are one, usership, is that a word?
Sure.
The usage of Google Reader has declined over the years, one. Two, they, and this is the second thing is something they've been saying for years, is they're trying to put more energy into fewer products, right? That's very much... Spring cleaning, yeah. That's very much the way Apple does things, right? Is Apple has a couple products and they put all of their energy into those couple products, right? At least in front of the scenes. Google has never quite been like that. They had Google Labs, all these little projects people were throwing resources at and trying to build cool things. And that's what I loved about Google. I'm not angry at Google for changing the way they're doing their business. I think it makes sense from a corporate standpoint.
Yeah.
But I'm a little bit bummed about it because Google Reader was the top RSS reader, I believe. Right?
Well, that's what gets me is if you're an organization that is making the best of something, so that it has sort of high value for users.
Yeah.
But you're looking at all your other products and it's a low value for you. It kind of takes the don't be evil.
Yeah.
Into question because they're just yoinking something away that a lot of people have come to really have fond feelings for.
You would think if there's so much user desire for it, they would kind of try to spin it off and do something with it that wouldn't be just taking it down.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's similar things with Google Translate, how they kind of scaled that back and whatnot and all of those.
All right, well.
So that's a bummer.
Moments ago, we were talking about where Mike and Alex worked, the Cruzeo building, and the founders. Can we move on? Are we good?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I had another quick mention, that Adobe Browser Lab, for those of you who are web developers, that's also going away. Oh. It's another product that's going away. And I mean, there are some other companies that do the same thing. BrowserStack and Sauce Labs both do the same things. And with Google Reader, there are a whole bunch of products that do the same thing as Google Reader, right? NewsBlur and Feedly, there's some desktop-based news readers as well. I'll put links to all of that up on the GeekSpeak site.
Thanks.
But the bummer for me is just that the best ones, in my mind, are going away. And that's really the news there. It's not that we're losing something and we can't do this thing anymore. It's that I have to change my workflow because I was using what I perceived to be the best RSS reader. And now, Yeah.
Cool.
So
thanks,
anyway.
Thanks for the story about Google Reader going away, Ben. I just want to bring up an upbeat, something that actually is a good thing. We were talking about Cruise.io a moment ago because they've got that great space down there. And last time we had Chris Nichols on the show. Nicholson? Nichols. That's another name I don't know.
Chris?
Yeah, Chris on the show from Cruise.io. I said, do you ever get like gag orders about tracking people because the federal government gives you a letter and you say you have to track and give information? Do you ever get that? And he said, you know, I can't talk about that.
So yes, he does,
right? It's a great way of saying yes to a question you can't answer. And so that's kind of creepy. But luckily, Timothy Lee wrote a wonderful article from Ars Technica that talks about the gagging recipients of national security letters. The gag order is found unconstitutional, which means Chris can start talking about it, which is really cool. Basically, what happens is that it's a California federal judge struck down a provision that allows national security, the NSL letters that like are pretty controversial because they're give us all the information about this person. You go, did a judge sign this or anything? And you're just supposed to do it. One of the things, the provision, it used to be that the actual ISP that takes the information from the user and hands it off to government can't say anything to the users, can't even report every year how many letters they get. Just totally have to be silent.
Well, and can't ask a lawyer about the constitutionality of it.
They can't?
Right? They can't talk about it with anybody. Gag order, they couldn't talk to anyone. And I think that's part of why it's not constitutional.
Yes.
Because it doesn't allow for... Is there an abuse of power here?
Right. So now hopefully that this will become more codified in the sense that people will start understanding that you can communicate about those things. And just to be aware, if you're doing... It's just a creepy thing that the government can get information from you and not tell you about it, right?
So that was the upbeat story.
That's the upbeat story. Okay. That's the going away. Yeah,
hey, awesome. I got a much more upbeat story.
Oh, really? Prove it.
More upbeat,
Ben.
Yeah, the Mars Curiosity rover has found some things on Mars. Now I'm just gonna.
It woke up then, because last week it halfway
last
was asleep.
Week, yeah, last okay. week it was in safe mode, so that was kind of a bummer. But anyway. Basically, what happened was Curiosity has been drilling into rocks. In fact, I think when we first were covering Curiosity starting to drill into rocks, someone made a Twitter account for the first rock it drilled into. Right. And it was like, oh, what's that? What's that machine? And the next tweet was like,
oh, I'm not alone
ow,
anymore.
Ow,
why are you attacking me?
So in any case, so Curiosity has been, you know, rolling around, drilling into rocks and examining them chemically. And really cool news. They found evidence of clay materials, or clay minerals, and clay minerals form in water. In addition to that, Curiosity, the Mars rover also found the presence of sulfur, phosphorus, carbon. So life as we know it needs all of these things, and here they are, right? Now, we did not find evidence of life. We haven't found actual organic material.
I would
on
think
Mars.
That we would have led with that story if we knew that.
Right.
Oh my God, tissue.
Oh, look, it's a dog. No. So, but I mean, the great news here is that we're finding that the conditions on Mars were very conducive to life, or at least a lot more conducive than we imagined at one point in the past. Yeah. We also know that we are fairly confident that there used to be water where Curiosity was, and we also know that there's water at the poles and stuff. So, I mean, we're finding, interestingly enough, we're finding that other celestial bodies in the universe are actually fairly hospitable to life. There's also another story, I don't have it up right now, but I'll find it and post it up on the GeekSpeak site, something like a large percentage, I'm not going to give you a number, but a very large percentage of other stars had planets around them, and of those planets, it was actually very often that you would find planets within 1 to 3 Earth masses.
Nice.
So, really awesome. I mean,
we might not be as alone as we think.
Well, what do
we
think?
We're not so special.
I think this is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. That's Ben Jaffe. Also in the air room is Bonnie Jean Primsch. Mike and Alex, they're founders of Gaijin Games. We'll be talking about Gaijin Games in just a minute, and specifically about their Bit Trip series and Bit Runner. You're listening to KUSP. Public Radio 889 Santa Cruz and KUSP.org. This is GeekSpeak. So Alex and Mike, you've been making computer games for a while?
Yeah, but you know, honestly, before we talk about our game, Ben was teasing us about some news story that he heard about.
Really? You want to go back to Ben?
Yeah, before we got on the air, and I think that's way more important.
So I have a question for you guys. Have you heard of wind farm sickness?
Yeah, about 20 minutes ago. You told us about it.
And then you wouldn't tell us anymore.
Information.
Okay,
what is it?
So here's the question. How does wind farm sickness spread, or what is it? Anyone have any guesses?
I think it's pollen.
You think it's pollen related?
I think it's people standing there and looking up at the spinning turbines and getting motion sick.
Or actually, I've got another theory too. Maybe cattle dung being blown around.
There we go.
Well, but why would wind farms blow anything now?
I don't know.
This thing people is, they just happen to be in windy spaces, so.
They do chop it up.
Get closer.
They chop it up.
They chop it up. Okay. They so it's getting sick from dead birds flying on you. No.
Yeah.
All right. Here's another question.
It's definitely bad.
I'll give you a hint. It spreads the same way Wi-Fi sickness spreads.
Oh, no. It's not real?
By word of mouth. For a long time, a lot of people for a long time have been hearing about Wi-Fi sickness, right? People using Wi-Fi in our town and we're getting dizzy because of it, or we're, you know, feeling these weird effects. And it's all psychosomatic. It's all in your head. There is absolutely no evidence.
We're not taking calls today on GeekSpeak, but you're welcome to email us, geeks@geekspeak.org.
Yeah.
Ben will be answering a lot of email this week.
Jeez. Oh, jeez. So, but I mean, the interesting thing about both Wi-Fi sickness and also now wind farm sickness is most places you don't find complaints. But when there are complaints, there are a ton of complaints because it spreads by word of mouth, right? Someone complains about it, says, I'm feeling dizzy. It's because of the wind farms. That's my scapegoat.
Because they're looking at them all the time.
Then other people are like, oh, yeah, those wind farms.
My theory is getting stronger.
I've been feeling weird too. Not dizzy, but all these other symptoms. And someone else is like, I've been feeling these other symptoms, right? So it's kind of a bummer. I mean, it's the way the human brain works, right?
So you would state officially that there is no such thing as wind farm sickness and wind farms are a good thing?
There is no objective wind farm sickness thing. No, it's a psychological condition perhaps.
Okay.
But, you know, it's people feeling symptoms of maybe nothing, maybe something else, and then blaming it on the wind farms blaming it on Wi-Fi, right?
Warning, bad segue. Last night I was feeling symptoms of something. No, I won't go to that. I was playing your guys' game last night. You guys gave me a code, and so I used Steam, which is an amazing service to distribute games. I mean, I got to say, I haven't logged into Steam on the machine that I'd logged in, and within a few minutes I had your game running, and then I saw, oh my gosh, I also have Portal 2. Oh my gosh, just play that.
That's a platform so you can play games on your computer as opposed to with a special console, right?
Yeah, well, it's actually, Steam's really a deployment system, right? So it's the company actually allows people to wrap up games and deploy them. The thing that's nice is if you have a game that's supported by their system, you can put the code in to the game on their system, and when you change machines, you just log into your account and get it running again.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of simplifies game deployment. Was that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, it's like a game portal in a lot of ways. You can actually even upload your own games and play them through there, which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, like if you own games that aren't available on Steam, right, and then they show up in your Steam library. It's an amazing service. It's basically like the console, quote unquote, for PCs, Mac, and Linux.
Now, is it in this space, as professional game developers, but independent professional game developers, is it hard to get on the large consoles? Is it a difficult? I mean, you just recently got on one, so clearly you did it.
We're on all of them.
Yeah,
actually, right now, it's very hard.
Is this the stressful part you're talking about?
The game.
It's
harder than making the game.
What makes it hard?
Well,
is it just sort of developing your game to match each of their different requirements?
Actually, you pretty much nailed it. That's like the hardest part of it. I mean, obviously, you also have to create the tech, which we have our own tech in house, the Atrophy engine that we've created, and that's a multi-platform engine, so it'll run on all the consoles and all the operating systems on the computer, but when you release a game for Nintendo's platforms, Microsoft and Sony's platforms, they all have these requirements that you must meet in order to be compliant to release the game.
Like what kind of requirements are they?
Well, like let's say you want to support vibration in your controller, right? Mm-hmm. So they each have rules about when you can vibrate the controller, how long you can do it for, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh,
and that's
wow.
Just one tiny little aspect.
And are they style points or are they just sort of necessary for the thing to work at all?
It's not really like necessary for it to work.
They're just guidelines, essentially, and you really have to follow the guidelines to their specifications.
To defend it,
or
though, a little bit, when you play an Xbox 360 and you play the games, you have a very... Once you start learning how to launch games and use games and everything, you become very comfortable with how the game's going to work, right? The things all kind of work the same way, and that's why, because they have these
that
really
exactly
structured
right.
things. Mm-hmm. But it just happens to be that because you're deploying all these platforms, you have to do it lots of times.
Well, and that's the bummer, is because they will conflict. So Nintendo's rules may be slightly different from Sony's, maybe slightly different from Microsoft. So now, all of a sudden, when you're ready to ship, you have to sit there and you have to change things, for certain platforms and branch them and maybe try to do them all the same on each platform, but that doesn't always work. So it becomes kind of a logistical nightmare.
And there's another thing to mention, I'd say, is like the communication. Sometimes there could be a 2-3 week turnaround.
Oh.
So if something is broken, you might not know about it for 2 weeks.
And then all of a sudden they launch.
Really hard for indie gamers to try and create something that can get out there.
It does, actually. Independent game studios have only relatively recently, within the last couple of generations of consoles, made it to the consoles. And I think that this is a huge talking point. I mean, we could go on for hours about this. But basically, Steam does it so well. And they take out all that crap that you have to go through, that you have to wade through.
Now, Steam is not a hardware. I mean, they traditionally haven't had a piece of hardware.
Right.
They just were software deployment on Macs and PCs.
Yeah.
And so unlike the Xbox and Nintendo and so on, they had their own, you could have use your own machines for them.
Yeah.
So in any case, that you're saying they've made it really easy.
They have. And it's, I mean, Mike and I were talking about this the other day. It's like you can test on the final hardware that you're going to release the game on.
Right.
Which is huge.
There's also some interesting things, too. You can upload your game, give out codes, and people can be playing the game as you develop the game. It's also worldwide distribution with, you know, PC, Mac, Linux.
And is there someone that that confirms and approves the game when it goes to Steam, or do you guys kind of control it yourself?
No, we control it ourselves. It's pretty self-governing.
That's pretty amazing.
We basically sink or swim on our own merits.
Yeah. So Bonnie, Ben, and I could go ahead and start making a game today, and in 6 years we could launch it on Steam when we were finished.
We could
put it on Steam, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it wouldn't be distraction. When the Steam engine would be fine.
You could call it Geek Speak Renner.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Specifically, your game is called Renner 2.
It is,
and it's part of the Bit Trip series. You had originally like 6 games in that series. Let's just describe the game because we're on radio, so people can't see it.
That's true.
Wait, I do have a quick question. Are you programming, just in talking about developing for different platforms, are you programming in the same language, or is it more difficult?
Yeah, like, what is that?
When you're developing for phones, for example, I mean, it sounds kind of like developing for all of the different platforms in some ways is like developing for the Apple App Store or the Android App Store in terms of restrictions and things like that and guidelines. Certainly with phones, you're developing in all these different languages, though.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a single language that you're developing in, or do you have your code branched out into these different languages? I'm kind of curious.
It's all C++, and our engineers are just brilliant. So basically, the Atrophy engine, like Alex said, it's a multi-platform engine, and it just magically works on those platforms.
I mean, a way to to sort of maybe oversimplify it is, you know, we make the game, like Mike said, in C++ and within our engine, and then our engine kind of puts...
Is the translator
like
for
a wrapper around it for the other?
So in your engine, you say Vibert controller, right? And then there's a translation to every one of those platforms that can do that.
The ones that
don't vibrate the controller, just
and
ignore that.
There's
statement,
also different branches. So for instance, like a good example would be buttons for each of the controllers.
Yeah.
So it goes off to these different branches, and it will automatically bring in the A button or the Y button. And
depending on the platform.
Depending on the platform.
I see what you mean.
So you think primary button, secondary button, tertiary button in the game controlling, and then depending on the controller you're using. Like when we were playing it with I couldn't get a USB controller working, so I was using the keyboard with the kids, and you had a really pretty screen that came up. The whole game has a very lovely feel in the sense that it's compelling and capturing. You get this wonderful audio narrator. In fact, I think we should go ahead and play some of the game. So if you could launch it, I'll pop up a little bit of the sound of it. Maybe. We'll see how well I do with this. It will happen in a second. So.
Nice.
Is it there? Well, we'll let it.
It's not playing yet. It's launching.
Oh, here we go.
Here's our logo.
One of the things, now this is the launch screen, so we're going to hear a few different things.
Today's thrilling episode is brought to you in part by Shorty's Milk Brine. It could be worse.
A lot of commercials in the beginning for fun.
I'm Charles Martinet, and now it's time for Bit Trip Presents Runner 2, Future Legend of Rhythm Alien.
So our main character, Commander Video, that's his name, but he's called the Rhythm Alien in Japan, and so we basically took that and incorporated it into this title. And the full title of our game is ridiculously long. This game, it's Bit Trip Presents Runner 2, Future Legend of Rhythm Alien.
Some people say it's the longest named video game out there. I haven't checked, though.
We almost went longer, too. We almost made
What else did you have almost in there?
Oh, I can't even remember it anymore. But it was like, on and on, you know, amazing adventures of Rhythm Alien in Futureland. You know, who knows? You know, all kinds of crazy stuff. Yeah. And but as you notice, when it was starting up, the announcer, he introduces himself. His name is Charles Martinet, and he's pretty well known in the game industry as the voice of Mario. Yeah. And so so working with him was a thrill. And like you said, the product placement at the beginning, that was...
Some of those were his ideas.
Oh, it was fun to work with him then.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Yeah. He is an amazing man.
Yeah, super silly. And that's the thing is, like, Mike and I are super silly guys. And we try to find the silliest people that we can to work with.
You know, I got from this game that you guys have a lot of fun making games. Like, that's what it felt like, right? All three of my kids were playing it. We're all passing the keyboard around with each other and laughing. And you know, when... This game is a platform game, so it's a running game, right? You're running from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. In fact, your character kind of stays in one place, and the landscape goes past you, like Mario Brothers, like a lot of games.
Yeah,
side scrollers, platform side scroller. When we were playing this game, one of the things that happens is you don't really die in the game, right? You just keep trying it, right? So you get smacked into something and you bounce back. And whenever you smack into something, the alien, what's his name?
Commander Video,
flies back with his arms like in this kind of spaghetti fashion, like woo-doo-doo-doo. And the girls were just cracking up at that. But what was interesting for me is, wow, they really effectively captured fun. Like, I think they had fun making this, but I also know that making games can be less than fun sometimes. Can you talk about the part that is the business side of it? I mean, I think that every human on the planet actually wants to just make video games. That's like what they really want to do. But they don't necessarily have the skills or abilities and all that, or the drive to do it. But there is, everybody goes, oh, it'd be fun. But every time I talk to people, I also hear about all this pain. So tell me about pain in video game making.
It's funny because like we get this question. The main thing is like, oh my gosh, you make video games. I want to do that. That sounds, you must play video games all day.
Yeah.
And every time I get asked this question, I kind of sigh and... I try to do everything I can to put a smile on my face.
Not to cry.
But it doesn't always work. It's a lot of work. It is. It takes a lot of dedication and to continue keeping that fun, as you say, and keep putting that into the game when you're overworked or you've put in 90 hours and...
Or what if you've made something like you were telling me the other day, like you spent like 3 or 4 days on asset and then just threw it away because it wasn't.
Yeah, and I had to scrap it. And stuff like that is, you know.
And now an asset specifically, describe what an asset is in the game.
An element in the game?
Yeah, so what this in particular was a one of the background things we call Titans. And it's just, it's made in 3D and you can texture it using texture maps made in Photoshop. And I'd worked on this thing for days and days and, you know, it's like, you know when you fight something and you just have to say, I can't fight this anymore. So I actually physically deleted it from my computer forever.
Oh, wow.
Which I always find a bummer because I look at all the art that Mike makes and like when he shows me stuff and I'm like, oh, that's awesome. You know, right away, I'm just like, wow, sweet. And then he's like, no, this is crap. You know, I'm like, what?
The temperamental.
No, not temperamental. Just, I'm easily impressed, I guess, by pretty pictures.
He's not that good. I'm just simple.
No, I think Mike is great. I think
So what made you decide? I've spent too much time in this. This isn't worth it. I'm going to delete it because that's a whole bunch of time for you. Right?
Yeah, for me, it was like, it was. I was just fighting it constantly. Mm-hmm. Like for 3 days, I was fighting it, and I looked at it. I woke up the next day. We actually have a live work loft in San Francisco, and I was staying up there. And the third day I woke up and I looked at it and I was like, this isn't going to go in the video game ever. This is gone.
From that to deciding to delete it is really interesting to me. I mean, it's very freeing. I work with artists a lot and I wish that they came to that conclusion sometimes, you know, but they rarely seem to. So I'm impressed. Was that kind of,
let me put it to you this way. It's made a better story than an actual asset.
Yeah, so. No further.
Well, and one of the things about the game design or development is you have to be okay with throwing out work that you have spent actual good time on. And there's, I think a lot of mistakes are made in sort of probably all aspects of life, but certainly in game development where somebody says, I worked on that for 2 weeks. That's going in the game.
Right.
But it doesn't, like, it but doesn't if it's bad, I'm sorry you worked on it for 2 weeks. Let's kill it. You know, get it out of there.
Well, this is this is what a director does a lot in it. You know, like animated films. I have friends that make animated films, and that's one of the things the director has to do. It's this horrible step. Do you guys find yourselves having to pull other people's work from the game? That must be harder, right?
I pulled a lot of one of our guys' work.
Yeah.
Or I just made him redo it and redo it and redo it. And same with our animator. I basically, I made her redo the first level background probably, what, five or six times, I think?
Yeah, between four and six times.
She's got the best demeanor, and I think she started getting frustrated by it. But
and this is Aaron?
This is Aaron Pierce-Zuazua.
That's a great name.
She's in Santa Cruz as well.
We're talking with the founders, the co-founders of Gaijin Games. They're Mike Roche and, is that wrong?
Roush.
Mike Roush and Alex Noisy. And they're game designers and developers, and their game is Runner 2. It's part of the Bit Trip series, and we're chatting kind of about computer game development, but also the experience of running a small business. Now, I'm assuming you guys have to hire coders, because neither of you are actually coders. In doing that, I'm assuming that some of these people have been with you for a while making games, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because it's a fundamental piece of the puzzle.
Exactly. Yeah. They wouldn't work without programmers making them work. Of course, they wouldn't be fun without designers, and they wouldn't look good without artists. So we're all, you know, we all need each other. But yeah, we've got two programmers at the company, and one of them has been with us a bit longer for several years now. And so, you know, we all, as you hire new people, you know, you start to like figure out how to work with them better and everything. And I think that we have a good office culture where everyone can kind of start to get in the flow pretty quickly. I think that, you know, I don't know, it comes from
your homepage is actually a time lapse of your office.
Yeah.
It's kind of, that's that San Francisco place?
That's San Francisco, yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, I don't want to stop you. Ben, you wanted to ask
questions. Oh, yeah, I had a quick question. So I was looking at the trailer when I found out you guys were going to be on the show. I was looking at the trailer yesterday, and I was thinking, like, okay, it's a nicely done trailer. It's just a video game, though, and I don't really play video games, so why am I interested? We were talking before the show, though. I mean, part of the title is Future Legend of Rhythm Alien. Can you talk maybe just a bit about that part, the rhythmic element to it, the musical element to it?
Yeah, for sure. So
that's what makes it unique for me, at least.
That's good to hear, because I think that that's what makes it unique for us, too. The Bit Trip series that we started back in 2008 ended up being a series of six games with a definite beginning, middle, and end, and the series was done. And they were all rhythm-based games, and they were all sort of had this retro aesthetic, sort of Atari 2600-esque. And I personally had wanted to make rhythm music games for a long time. And so this was the first series of games that we made as a company. And so I was going to see my dream of making a music rhythm game, you know? And so that's kind of how that started. And then as we went on, it sort of became this metaphor for life. Like we have said, I mean, we said just out, you know, out before we started, before we got on the air, we were like, aren't we all rhythm aliens?
Yeah.
You know, and so, because we all have a heartbeat and it all goes to the same BPM, more or less, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, one of our games, Bit Trip Void, we chose the BPM of a resting human heart because that game was all about sort of conception and growing and becoming a real creature.
Huh.
But anyway.
Do you know what that number was? Resting human heart, the average one that you chose?
Oh, I can't remember anymore. I want to say 120 BPM. Is that right?
120.
Yeah, it was something.
I think that might be it.
It's all the John Philip Sousa marches.
I can't remember for sure. But anyway, so, you know, and the series just continued with this rhythm stuff. And Runner 2 is a rhythm-based platformer. For all those video game nerds out there, you can think of Vib Ribbon if you know what that is.
You know, okay, so I was going to say, only time I've ever bought a console was because I saw Vib Ribbon played, and I said, I have to have that game. And so I bought a Sony PlayStation I think, just to play Vib Ribbon.
It's amazing that you did that, by the way. It really is.
I don't have it anymore. I gave the game console to somebody else. But the game, so let's describe Vib Ribbon. It's a black surface, thin white line, and you're a character that's running on this thin, and you're actually made of a line segment as well. Mm-hmm. And all these shapes come at you, but the shapes are generated by music. In fact, they're generated by your music. You put your own CD into the system, and it looks at your music and somehow conceptually creates a platform type game based on that. So you see these objects flying at you, and depending on its pattern, there's four basic patterns that can add to each other. You have to jump the item or get scrambled by it, and it's just the four buttons on the controller. But the thing that's wonderful about it is that all of it is based on the music. So it's playing the music beforehand, looks at what it is, and as you get that beat, you're playing music. It's a fantastic, and in your game, Runner 2, is like that as well, where you don't control the speed of it, the song's controlling the speed, and the objects in there are based off of the music. So when you play it right, if you will, you're jamming.
Well, you are creating more and more music, right? Like, were you saying before the show started that depending on what you manage to jump over and what sort of points you get, that creates an extra richness in the music. There's another element of the music that's
that changes
added.
Some people.
Yeah, so there's always a track going, and if you jump over an object, it makes a tone that sort of mixes with the music. And along the way, you collect these power-ups that will sort of add another layer to the music, and it sort of builds up. And then the last power up, there's like a crescendo for the end of the level, which
ta-da.
Is
when you hit the flag. And
like, and you get a flag behind you. It's really pretty.
I gotta say though, I was watching a while ago up at UCSC. Actually, we all watched Indie Game, the movie.
Oh, cool.
And if you, Ben and Bonnie, have you seen Indie Game?
No.
Okay, we're doing a movie night at my place really soon. We're gonna watch it. It's awesome. But in any case, it talks about four groups developing computer games, very much like indie games, right? Mm-hmm. Actually, one of them is a Santa Cruz person, right? I think Meat Boy is partially
produced. Yeah, Team Meat, Edmund. Yeah,
Team Meat.
Edmund and Tommy.
I guess you know them, right? You all go to the same.
Yeah, we're buddies. Yeah.
And one of the things that was repeated in playing Super Meat Boy was that players hate the developers, right? Because it's so hard to get the beat right? Or to get the, for them, it's not beat, but to jump over things and you keep on getting destroyed and killed. And in that game, it gets very bloody. But in your game, I had the same experience. The kids last night and I were like so frustrated trying to jump over those things at the right time. And it is this kind of love-hate. When you actually finish that level, you love it. And there's no delay, right? You bump into something, you fly back to the beginning, you start again, right? It's really quick. So it was really fun to throw the controller around, keyboard around with the kids and have that kind of finally getting it going, oh, thank God. And I had to sneak out of the house because they wanted to come here and give you guys hugs. So.
Oh, that was sweet.
Which maybe should have been
it's
what
amazing.
I did.
We've gotten actually some videos sent to us of little kids dancing to the music while their dad plays. And it almost brings a tear to your eye seeing this.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really amazing.
Yeah, we have managed somehow to tap into something that that people like on a very core level with the original Bit Trip series and also with Runner 2. They really feel attached to it, and our fans, the ones who choose to contact us, are just lovely, lovely fans, and you know we love all of them, and we like corresponding with them, and when you get a good piece of fan mail, it's amazing, especially when they get what you're trying to do.
And another quick thing is, I mean, I think something that should be said about Runner 2 is it's a video game about fun and happiness, not war and killing.
Yeah.
Oh, and that was the thing. I wanted to talk about that too, because you were saying it feels like we are fun people who like to have fun when we make our fun stuff. And that was our mantra going into Runner 2 was, quote unquote, have a fun. Like, that's what we, you know, that was our like...
As in a noun kind of thing.
Have a fun.
Why not?
While we were working on it, while we were playing it, and... hopefully that shines through in the game.
Well, I hope you're having the fun right now on Geek Speak. This is Geek Speak. We're on KOSP 889 Santa Cruz. Of course, you can find us at kosp.org. You can find Geek Speak at geekspeak.org. And everything we talk about on the show is available for you to take a look at and peruse and dive into a little bit more. Bonnie, do you have a machine in front of you? And you can talk about Robert Pauly's show in just a second.
I do.
In the air with me is Ben Jaffe and Mike and Alex. They're co-founders of Gaijin Games. We're going to keep on talking about Gaijin Games and maybe actually have it play in the background a little bit so we can hear a little bit of the music we're talking about. And but also in the air with me is Bonnie Jean Primsch.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of the 7th Avenue Project. That's airing tomorrow on KUSP at high noon. And tomorrow on the show, Believing You're Right Even When You're Wrong. Neurologist Robert Burton discusses our often unjustified sense of certainty. It's a big problem here in America. And wonders whether our brains are really capable of judging themselves. He'll talk to KUSP's Robert Pauly next time on the 7th Avenue Project, and that's tomorrow at high noon on 88.9 KUSP. And you can also listen to it later by podcast at kusp.org anytime thereafter.
So a few years ago, I discovered a Mac game called Plasma Pong, and it actually is very similar to the game we're talking about today, Runner 2. What it was is it was a fluid, crazy, intense version of Pong, and it played this really intense music in the background. And every time Every time the ball got past the paddle, it would increment the pitch by half a step. It would make it faster and faster and faster and more intense.
Wait, now, you're playing, smiling. You said you don't play video games.
I barely play video games. But, I mean, this was really addictive. But the thing I didn't like about it, I loved this game, but the thing I didn't like about it is it made me feel really, really anxious. Like, oh, my God, the adrenaline started going. The thing I like about Runner 2, the game we're talking about today, is that it's music-based. It interacts with music more, and it doesn't leave me with a sense of anxiety. It makes me happy.
Hmm.
So, I mean, you know, that's just a bit about
just
what we were talking about.
Just wait till
the last level. Uh-oh. Yeah, that crescendo you were talking about, I don't know.
We were touching on music earlier before the show, and Mike, you were talking about how you had this great review from IGN, which is a major game review company, and they said that they love the game, which is congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And they talked about it being feeling like they were playing an instrument. And what was your experience that day at home?
I read this review of Runner 2, and the guy... Basically, like you said, he sort of hearkened it to learning how to play a musical instrument. It's hard at first, but once you know, you know, you're really good at it or whatever. So I went home and I was playing Runner 2 myself. And I was sitting there and I had the controller in my hand. And I felt like I really wasn't even looking at the character. I was just kind of fading away into the screen. And my fingers were... touching all the buttons.
Without thinking, of course.
Without thinking. And all of a sudden I realized, you know, this guy's completely right. Here's a game I've been working on for almost 2 years, and I never thought of this.
Yeah.
And I really felt like I was controlling some bizarre alien musical instrument.
Yeah,
future
alien. You're jamming with it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're jamming with the game.
And I was absolutely jamming.
So that interests me, because if sort of that incremental sort of addition of music... and the game as sort of a music player wasn't your primary goal or a conscious decision that you were making about the game, what was? Like, why did you make this game in the first place?
I don't know. You want to answer that, Alex?
Well, either one of us probably has the same answer. The musical interaction was definitely a primary goal.
Okay.
Especially in particular to Bit Trip Runner, which is, you know, this is Runner 2, so this is the sequel to Bit Trip Runner. And those first six games in the Bit Trip series were heavily, heavily music-based.
Okay.
And so it was super sort of, I don't know, like hammered, you know, home that this is a music game in Runner 1. Mm-hmm. And then Runner 2, of course, you know, we wanted it to be in the same family. But the music, while still important, it wasn't maybe as... front stage, you know.
It was just a mechanic.
It was there and it was nice, but it was a little more subtle. And I think the focus in Runner 2 is a little bit more, I mean, now that you mention it, it's more like that hand feel. It's I want my hands to feel good while I'm playing this game. Kind of like how I always thought of Tony Hawk, those first Tony Hawk games.
Yeah.
Like, when you really got good at them, your hands felt good. Yeah. It was like, wow,
I'm doing that.
That feeling is something I really wanted to talk about, because it's when I used to play the sax a lot, when you got through the song the right way, there was this feeling about it. You almost like predicted your success every step. There's this idea, like, it's almost like it feels like you're leading yourself into success. And that's the same thing you get with a video game. I think that's why these kind of repetitive platformers are kind of like that. No one's going to sit down at this game and go through without making a mistake and win the whole game. Right. The big part of the process is failing and getting better and failing and getting better. And that loop, quick, which is important, I think, has this effect for you that very much feels like that sensation you get when you know success is right there. And it's a really,
like,
I don't
zone?
Know if we have an
what?
English word for it, really. Well,
you
know,
like
it's a zone, but you know that feeling if you've ever played an instrument and you've been practicing and you're almost about to get it, and then
it becomes an extension of you.
Yeah, but also the time when you actually succeed at getting it, you kind of predict yourself doing it every single step. You know your success is almost there.
It's the flow state, I think.
Term?
Yeah, I think that's
what. Maybe that's when you get into that flow state.
Yeah.
It's also almost like an epiphany or a or becoming enlightened in that moment in that aspect.
Yeah.
Like that's, I think I hadn't thought of it this way before, but when I play one of the later levels in Runner 2 on hard difficulty, because there's three different difficulties.
You must be quite good at the game.
Yeah.
He's played it before.
I've played it before, yeah. when I'm not distracted by other things and I can sit there and I can get in that flow state, I do almost feel like I have elevated my consciousness in that moment. Not permanently, not necessarily in like a super profound way, but in that moment it's profound.
You've just gotten really present.
And for that action, yeah, I guess, yeah.
Also you get to this sort of point where you, like for me personally, I'll sit there and I'm like, nothing can stop me. I am completely 100% invincible.
Yeah.
Do you know what?
Yeah. And then you smack
something. Say, the second idea. That's the worst. Is like all of
since you're conscious of it. Oh, no.
Yeah. Our other games, the first six games in the series are very, very hard. They're very difficult games. And you were talking about the plasma.
Plasma Pong.
It reminded me of our first game in the series, Bit Trip Beat, which is basically musical Pong. It's a one-sided game of Pong with music. And so I want to see this Plasma Pong game.
It was taken off in 2008 or something like
but,
that.
But is that
Atari's trademark kind of thing?
Is your game the same type of thing where you're going to lose eventually? It's just a matter of time?
No.
Okay,
no,
good.
Not Bit Trip Beat is not. But when Mike was saying like, I'm unstoppable. You remember how when I was trying to perfect Beat in the office when we were developing it? Yeah. And I'd be sitting there and I'd be totally in the zone. I would be almost to the end of the level. And then I would think, this might be the time I get a perfect.
Pow.
And then it's over. Like or within the next 2 seconds.
The weird thing is I would turn around and he would know I was looking at him.
Yes, it's the
very
worst.
Good.
And
that's
even
good
when I couldn't see you.
Yeah. So, so there's something going on here that is actually the reason I do Geek Speak. We're all kind of getting really geeky about computer games. And there is a general malaise about computer games. That's a kid thing. And even though it's a multi-billion dollar business, it's this amazing industry and everybody plays games almost, right? You talk to people that the actual, you talk about Angry Birds on phones, right? So it's this game that so many people play. Farmville for a while was like that. Sure. People are, I'm not a gamer. Yeah, but you happen to play 4 hours a day. You just happen to be on your phone. And this idea that it's actually a very important part of our culture, we're going to see that retroactively. Right now, I hope everybody in this room, I'm assuming, is aware that it's a big part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And okay, so after that little rant about how much I love games, let me just mention, we haven't talked at all about actually how you get this unless you already know what Steam is. So your game's available, I'm assuming. We don't talk about price because we're a public radio, so we're not doing a commercial. I'm endorsing it because I love the game, but I only speak for myself, not for KOSP. But where do you get this game?
You can get it on Steam, which is on PC, Mac, and Linux. You can also get it on the Wii U. It's a digital download on all these platforms. You can get it on the Xbox 360.
Is the Wii U the online Wii
download? The Wii U is the new Nintendo console.
Oh, okay.
And, it's got that crazy screen.
It's got a touch screen controller thing that's really cool.
Yeah, and so you just go to their eShop and you can get it there. And it's also on the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 as well.
And so then you can learn more about the game at geekspeak.org. We'll have links. But right now, you can go to runner2.com.
Yeah.
By the way, nice domain name. Did pay much for it?
Runner2.com?
It's amazing that we got it.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that would have been one of those yummy days in the office.
Yeah, it was very cool.
Domain names as a web developer is always you can start a whole business if you find the right name. Like, oh, well, now what am I going to do?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Let the domain name.
Well, it's nice that you have a 2 at the end. Because I'll bet runner.com would have been really good.
It's
got to
be gone. Yeah, yeah.
Runner 1.
Yeah.
You know, the first time I saw Runner 2, after I talked to you, Mike, I ran into you at Cafe Ben. By the way, Cafe Ben is a great coffee shop. It's in Santa Cruz. If you're in Santa Cruz, go by there.
If you need a vintage phone.
Sounding commercial enough for you? Can you I don't know.
Well, what was that?
I just found out they're not
doing that. Lyle really likes their coffee.
You know,
I just found out
that they're not doing that well, and I know the owner, and I like the business, and so I'm just saying. That's where we met. And Mike and I met there. We're talking about, one of us was talking about something. We both went, well, yeah.
We geeked out.
I cannot remember. I lost my train of thought. The commercialism hit me hard. Thank you, Bonnie. All right, favorite video games.
Oh,
Alex?
Dear. Super Metroid.
You know what?
Mike?
That's my favorite video game.
Oh, my God. You know, I've never played this, and everybody I talk to says it's awesome.
That's
what Miles' favorite video game is.
It is amazing.
I think that's probably one of the best video games
Describe
ever
it.
Made. Oh, golly. It's a side-scrolling platformer.
The one I thought of then. Never mind.
Sort of a similar genre to Runner 2, just the perspective and everything. But you're this, it's a sci-fi thing, and you're this, galactic bounty hunter, and you have these guns and stuff. And as you go around fighting little enemies and stuff, you get upgrades for your suit and everything.
You start becoming invincible.
And the joy in the game, like one of the best things is the ambiance. Like,
yeah.
It's the
very cinematic.
Puts you in the right
space.
It's
on the Super Nintendo. And
it's an old game. It's what year was that?
93.
Yeah.
I didn't play it. Mine, I think, is VibRibbon. I love that game. I mean, yeah, I haven't played in a long time, so I'm gonna have to get back into it. But actually, right now, I'm spending all my time in Minecraft because my kids love Minecraft. Ben, I know you don't like video games. So.
I don't.
What's your favorite game in general? Do you like Set? Do you ever play the card game Set?
I think Go is a good game. I mean, if I talk about retro, that's been around for a little while. I don't know when it was released, but
it's like saying I like banging two sticks. Well, like,
when I teach video games to kids, as I do often in the summer, I tell them my favorite video game ever is the original Pong, just because I like seeing their
expressions. You can write it in 4 minutes.
I like seeing their expressions on their faces when I show them an emulation of it in a browser, and it's just like a box bouncing around the screen, and they're like, "What is that? That's dumb," you know? Like, that's just kind of fun.
I would like to just go on the record and say, if you are equally matched with another Pong player, Pong is a fantastic game.
Oh, yeah. But I don't know. Any game that teaches me or that I can interact with in a unique way. Like Runner 2, maybe. I don't know.
Bonnie, favorite game?
The Neverhood.
What?
No way.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
You guys remember that?
It was a
stop-action animation claymation game.
Mm-hmm. What?
What's
it used clay animation as the characters?
Yeah.
Stop-action what?
Remember this? Yeah, we were just talking about
the
this
Neverhood.
Yesterday.
Wow.
And it was like from the mid-90s or something.
Yeah.
Fantastic and a goofball soundtrack.
If you're interested in all the stuff we talked about today, you can learn more at geekspeak.org. In the air with me is Bonnie Jean Primsch, Ben Jaffe, I'm Lyle Troxell, and also we have designers and developers Alex and Mike of Gaijin Games. You can learn more about their game, Runner 2. It's just runner2.com. Mike and Alex, thanks so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Geekspeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Hey, we'll be back next week, so stay tuned now, though, for Card Talk, and thanks for listening to Geekspeak on KUSP.